fracking is a form of natural gas drilling, an alternative to oil, cause the oil kept spilling, bringing jobs to small towns, so everybody's willing. People turn on the lights and the drillers make a killing.
Water goes into the pipe into the ground, the pressure cranks fishes 7,000 feet down. The cracks release the gas that powers your town. That will frack, yeah, totally frack.
But there's more in the water than just H2O. Toxic chemicals help to make the fluid flow, with names like benzene and formaldehyde. You better keep it far away from the water supply.
The drillers say the fishes are a mile below the groundwater pumped into American homes, but don't tell it to the residents of Sublet Way. Oh, that water's frack. We're talking benzene.
Welcoming you back to part two of this week's broadcast of Radio Resistance, Sound of David Holmes. My water's on fire tonight. Now, anyone who's listened to Radio Resistance for any amount of time will know all about the dangers of fracking. But one of the things that those who defend fracking and fossil fuels in general keep saying is we need to keep the lights on. And a major user of fossil fuels is indeed electricity generation. Electricity is widely used for lighting as well as heating, cooking, refrigeration, workplace machinery, computers, TVs, mobile phones, tablets. Indeed, while you're listening to this broadcast of Radio Resistance, you'll be using electricity, etc, etc, etc. Now, how is electricity produced in the first place? Well, mostly it's produced by a generator based on a dynamo. Coils of wire are turned around a magnet, which produces electricity, as stated by Faraday's law of induction and Lenz's law, both of which are also used in motors. Indeed, a generator is in fact, you could call it a motor in reverse. Whereas motors take electricity and turn round, a generator is turned round and produces electricity. In the case of fossil fuel generators, fossil fuels are burnt to create heat, which heats water and turns it into steam, and the steam drives a motor, which in turn turns the generator. But that ain't the only way in which the generator can be turned. It can also be turned by other carbon-free means. The main one I can think of being by wind turbines, which work on a similar principle to the windmills used in the Middle Ages to turn grinding wheels to make flour. The big difference being that modern rotor blades harvest the wind energy far more efficiently. And contrary to some of the complaints about wind farms, they actually produce less noise and less vibrations than the old Middle Ages windmills. But another argument which is often used against wind power is that it's not reliable, wind doesn't blow all of the time. Nevertheless, countries like Denmark make over 40% of their electricity using wind. And the UK has the best wind in Europe, i.e. the most constant average wind speed across the country, due to low pressure areas, including storms, tracking from the Atlantic across the UK. So if the wind turbines are placed across the UK to catch the wind from the low pressure systems wherever they're hitting the UK, this can produce electricity using wind with over 95% reliability. And this would be even better if the power grid serving England and Wales was connected properly to Scotland. Because Scotland gets especially windy, it gets a greater proportion of the wind due to the clear path across the Atlantic to Scotland. And the reliability is also improved by wind farms, i.e. groups of turbines, being at sea where there's a more constant wind because it's not affected by obstructions, unlike onshore wind. Also, the generators can be turned by flowing water, hydroelectric energy. Now, this has a bit of a bad name because it's often associated with big dams, which create environmental issues of their own, such as the flooding of the valley upstream of the dam, reducing the water supply downstream, and their presence affects the migration of fish and freshwater animals. But hydroelectric doesn't have to have big dams, it can be produced small scale or micro hydro by simply placing the generator in the river in a cage with no need for the dams. And a completely different form of electricity generation is solar power. That doesn't use a dynamo. It uses solar panels which are made up of many solar cells, each of which generate electricity when lit up, as the light photons react with atoms in the solar cell, producing an electric current. One difference is that they produce direct current electricity, which needs to be converted to alternating current in order to be supplied to the electric grid. Contrary to myth that they're no good here in the UK, as if that's not been proved by the number on roofs, etc., modern solar panels do work quite well even in cloudy, overcast conditions, although one downside is that they don't tend to work at night, although bright moonlight can produce a very small amount of electricity. But to do away with fossil fuels altogether, we must overcome the fact that the electricity supply from wind and solar does vary. To mitigate that, we need energy storage. One form of energy storage still under development but proceeding rapidly is that of high power storage batteries. For example, Tesla batteries, which can be in big sort of like installations on a par with a power plant, or alternatively, they could be spread around, installed in homes, which has the advantage that it removes distribution losses and is more efficient. Another form of energy storage that's been around for some time is the pumping water uphill into large cave reservoirs inside mountains during times of excess power generation, i.e. when more power is being generated by wind or solar than is being used by the grid, i.e. by consumers and businesses. And then at times of high demand, releasing the water downstream and using hydroelectric generation to harness the power of the water as it runs downstream. Another alternative is to use the excess power to create hydrogen, which can then be burnt cleanly. When hydrogen is burnt, it produces water, H2O, not carbon dioxide, i.e. CO2. And another myth I'd like to nuke is the idea that nuclear power is in some way green. Sorry, but it ain't. Nuclear power gives issues with radioactive discharges, as I detailed in my recent series on nuclear weapons, namely cancer, birth defects, etc. And nuclear power ain't renewable. It uses uranium, of which there's only a finite supply in the world. And last but certainly not least, it ain't carbon neutral. Carbon is needed to transport the uranium, to process the uranium, to dispose of the uranium, and a massive amount of carbon is used to build the massive nuclear power stations. But, some argue, we will, even with massive amounts of wind and solar power generation, still need nuclear power for a reliable baseline supply to the national electricity grid, which is needed to keep the grid operational. Well, one answer to that is the use of tidal power. Tidal power entails large, buoyant barrage, which floats on the water surface, going up and down with the water level as the tide comes in and goes out. The barrage is then connected to a series of gears, which translate the small but immensely powerful rise and fall of the barrage to a much larger speed, which can drive the generators. Incidentally, one way in which tidal power is different from other renewables like solar and wind is that instead of getting the power from the sun directly in the form of solar energy, indirectly in the form of wind energy, tidal power instead gets most of its energy from the moon. Anyway, tidal power could, if it's placed in the sea off areas with a coastal erosion problem, like the east coast of the UK, help mitigate that particular problem by taking some of the energy out of the powerful destructive waves, while at the same time producing a reliable source of electricity. And there's many other possibilities, one being geothermal. That's running the water far underground where it's warmer and using the warm water not just for driving the generators but for heating and bathing. Indeed, that could be one non-polluting use for the big drills which are commonly used for fracking. So the big problem we've got, why we're not going carbon neutral with electricity generation, it ain't the lack of options for renewables, it's the lack of government support for these options. Remember that the Tory government support, and are supported, indeed funded by, big fossil fuel companies who want to keep on making their profits by selling their power. So, subsidies for solar power have been cut, onshore wind generation increasingly suffers difficulty in getting permission from wind turbines, as the tour is listened to much too object as to wind turbines. I'm sure at least one of them must be a Mr. Quixote, first name Don. While at the same time they override any objections to, for example, fracking. So, to properly move away from fossil fuels, we need to get rid of not just the Tory government, but the whole capitalist system. In a rational, planned, socialist system, we could also massively reduce the supply of energy needed in the first place, for example by insulating homes and other buildings, and changing all the lighting to LED or otherwise low energy lighting. And on the industrial level, the production of stuff which uses large amounts of energy to produce could be timed or scheduled in line, in sympathy with the when there's a natural abundance of, for example, wind during the autumn, or solar power during daytime hours. Or indeed it could be staggered over a longer period, so less electricity is used in one go. Unfortunately, under capitalism, the capitalist mode of production is to rush things out to try to capitalise on market demand. That needs to go. So, to quote the title of the Martin Empson book on climate change, which is well worth reading, we need system change, not climate change. And on that note, going back to the music with the sound of David Rovics, as if to prove that the American government and establishment are no better than our government and establishment when it comes to renewables. Track entitled Tax the Sun.
They claim they were all for fairness and for keeping the market free. They were all about competition against all subsidy. They're opposed to raising taxes wherever they may be, except in certain cases, such as when the oil industry feels threatened by entrepreneurs trying to get something done. So now it's time to tax the sun. They say they're all for individuals pursuing worthy goals, except ones that might cause industry to dig up less coal. So the politicians voted and almost all agreed. There was no need for debate before they did the deed. No need for gridlock now, united almost everyone. Now it's time to tax the sun. Serving people's interests is the politician's goal, especially certain people who like digging giant holes, like very wealthy businessmen with names like David Koch. Concerned extractive industries might soon be going broke. One more solar panel than the terrorists have won. So now it's time to tax the sun. They say they can't give cheaper access to the electric grid, although we don't all use it now as some of us once did. Although we make it cheaper for everybody else by putting up these turbines and those solar cells, there may be lots of benefits, the downsides may be none. But now it's time to tax the sun. There may be a climate crisis, the lights may all go dark, all the scientists agree, the situation's stark. If we're heading toward the wall, speeding down the tracks, the solution to the problem must surely be a tax. Wanna make things better? They'll have you on the run. Now it's time to tax the sun. Now it's time to tax the sun.
This is the Radio Resistance Red Guide, a guide to protests, meetings, entertainment and anything else of interest in Chesterfield area. Tomorrow, that's Sunday 2nd of February, there's a showing of the climate film 2040 at 5:30pm at the Pomegranate Theatre in Chesterfield. 2040 is a hybrid feature documentary that looks to the future but is vitally important now. Award-winning director Damon Gamo of That Sugar Film fame embarks on a journey to explore what the future could look like by the year 2040 if we simply embrace the best solutions already available to us to improve our planet and shifted them rapidly into mainstream. Coming Thursday 6th of February, the Chesterfield Socialist Worker Forum will be on Is the State Neutral? This is from 7pm downstairs in Chesterfield Library. Enter by the cafe browser entrance on Beetle Street, down the steps from the main entrance. Coming Saturday the 8th of February, there's the Stand Up to Racism Trade Union Conference in London. Also in London, there's the Extinction Rebellion protests outside BP. To BP or not to BP. While here in Chesterfield, Extinction Rebellion are planning a protest from 12:30pm. In solidarity with victims of the Australian wildfires and protesting against the root cause of the Australian fires, namely climate chaos. On Thursday 13th of February, the Chesterfield Socialist Worker Forum is on Can We Solve the Problem of Plastic? Again from 7pm, again downstairs in Chesterfield Library. On Friday 14th of February, there's the School Climate Strike from 12 midday at Matlock Crown Square. On Saturday 22nd of February, Extinction Rebellion are having a march down in London, protesting against climate change and again focusing on the Australian forest fires. Looking forward to Saturday 21st of March, there's the UN Anti-Racism Day demo in London with a coach from Chesterfield and Matlock. Tickets £20 wage, £10 low wage or £5 unwage. And that evening, Chesterfield Extinction Rebellion are having a fundraiser with live bands from 7pm till 11pm at the Phoenix Suite on Chester Street.
This is a public service announcement with guitar. Know your rights. All three of them. Number one, you have the right not to be killed.
sound there of The Clash, Know Your Rights. This one's for Tim of the Derbyshire Unemployed Workers Centre, and thanks Tim for letting us know of the sad death of Barry Johnson, who apparently died this week. And Tim pointed us to a obituary to Barry Johnson written by Collie Hampton of the Derbyshire Unemployed Workers Centre. Barry lived from 1931 through till this year, 2020. It goes as follows. Barry Johnson, former president of Chesterfield and District Trade Union Council and trustee of Derbyshire Unemployed Workers Centres, died this week after a long illness. Barry, who originated from Hucknall, was involved in politics from an early age, as his father had been blacklisted from the pits after the 1926 dispute, while his mother was active in the unemployed workers' movement of the 1920s and 1930s. He was an enthusiastic trade unionist throughout his working life. As an activist in Ulster, he was a member of Nottingham Trade Council for many years. Barry worked at the Chesterfield College from the mid-1970s, where he developed the Trade Union Studies Unit, until early retirement in 1991, when he moved to live in Chesterfield. As a delegate from the College Lecturers Union, he became president of the Chesterfield and District Trade Union Council, helping to establish the Derbyshire Unemployed Workers' Centres based in the town. He also served on the regional executive of the Midlands TUC for an extended period. He was an accomplished orator, having the experience as a young man of drawing an audience while standing on an orange box in Nottingham's Slab Square. Many people will remember Barry's enthusiastic and uplifting performances as the Master of Ceremonies at Chesterfield's May Day celebrations during the 1980s and 1990s. He stood down as a matter of principle when he retired from work, insisting that the president should be active in the workplace. Barry had a long association with the mining industry and gave unstinting support to the miners during the 1984 to 1985 miners' strike. He worked tirelessly during the strike in support of the miners both at Lindby in Nottinghamshire, near his home, and in Derbyshire, where he worked. On retirement, he took the time to study for an MA in local history at Leicester University and produced two short books, one on the general strike in Mansfield and also a study of the operation of the butty system in the local coal mines. He spent many years researching for a PhD, but finally his illness prevented him from completing that project. Barry also played an important role in starting the Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire Labour History Society, serving as chair. His continued support for the unemployed workers' centres was crucial, and he served on both regional and national committees, gaining the respect of people throughout the country. Barry also took an active part in the secular humanist movement, having been a founder member of the Sheffield Humanist Society and serving on its committee for several years. On his 80th birthday, a celebration event was held in the Winding Wheel, with performers from far and wide taking place, the protest going to the Unemployed Workers' Centre at his request. There'll be a memorial meeting at 11 a.m. at the Winding Wheel Ballroom in Chesterfield on Monday the 17th of February. Please ring Hillary on 01246 270 628. That's 01246 270 628 if you wish to attend, so that catering arrangements can be made. And now, before we go back to the music, with another sad announcement of someone who was also passed over to the next life, namely Andy Gill of the Gang of Four. He went to the next life, presumably today, Saturday, aged 64. He died of pneumonia. Now, one of the Gang of Four's most known songs is coming up next. At Home, He's a Tourist. This is Political Climate, your weather forecast for the coming week. Well, at least we've seen the back of the gales we had earlier today, but don't mean the weather's going to be great tonight into tomorrow. That's Sunday, there's going to be heavy rain. And it's still going to be raining on and off into the afternoon. The wind tomorrow will at least moderate to a moderate breeze. Maximum temperature 11 degrees. Drying up in the afternoon and overnight, getting down to 7 degrees into Monday morning. Monday looks like it's going to be dry with sunny intervals. Maximum temperature 8 degrees. Wind building up slightly to a fresh breeze. dropping down to 4 degrees overnight into Tuesday. Tuesday, more sunny intervals and continuing fresh breeze. Maximum temperature 8 degrees again. Dropping down to a kind of chilly 2 degrees overnight into Wednesday. Wednesday is dry with some sunny spells, especially in the morning. Maximum 8 degrees. Wind dropping to a gentle breeze. Dropping down not quite so far, but only just to 3 degrees overnight into Thursday. Thursday, guess what? Dry with sunny intervals and a gentle breeze. Maximum temperature climbing slightly to 9 degrees. Dropping down not so far to 5 degrees overnight into Friday. Friday sees dry with sunny intervals. Wind building slightly to a moderate breeze. Maximum temperature 9 degrees. So, in summation, after an unsettled weekend, the rest of the week looks set to be mostly dry with some sunshine. Staying kind of breezy throughout the week. Maximum temperatures between about 8 and about 10 or 11 degrees. Not too bad for early February. Minimum temperatures down in the low single figures, may get the odd bit of frost overnight. All in all, what you expect for February. But remember, whatever the weather, revolutions have happened in the biting cold of Russia right through to the burning heat of Egypt. So revolution can happen here. So we must be prepared for an upturn in class consciousness and class struggle, just as we're prepared for a change in the weather.
Just a child, life was so carefree, full of hope and dreams, but her luck changed suddenly. Europe was in crisis, there was hunger, poverty, that made Adolf Hitler strong in Germany. He became the Führer, a new war had begun. But in his ideal nation was no room for everyone. For all Jewish people, he felt such hate inside. Now Anne was in danger, she found a place to hide. Behind a bookcase in an office, there was a secret door. For 2 years she was hiding with her family of four. And in those years of waiting, waiting to be free, Anne wrote her story in her famous diary. Betrayed and then deported to Nazi camps of hate. Though the war was nearly over, for Anne it was too late. She was just a child whose diary should be read. This should not have happened, and we must never forget.
Michael Lustenhauer there, and Anne Frank. Anne Frank was almost certainly the most famous victim of the terrible millions of murders which happened during the Nazi Holocaust. Now, Monday was Holocaust Memorial Day, and this year is the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, the most murderous of the Nazis' death camps. Now, the Holocaust under Hitler's Nazis was terrible in its scale. 6 million Jews, about two-thirds of European Jews, were murdered, as were 250,000 disabled people, approximately 200,000 Roma gypsies, many, many gay people, millions of political opponents, especially communists and trade unionists. And the scale of the murder is why the term Holocaust is often wrongly used to describe any mass killing, including, for example, a nuclear holocaust following a nuclear war. And the scale of the Holocaust is what was alluded to by Extinction Rebellion founder Roger Hallam's major blunder of describing the Holocaust as just another act of fuckery. Well, it's true that the numbers I've mentioned are less than the numbers who'd die in the potential extinction of all humanity, but we can't forget, we mustn't forget, that the Holocaust was different, was much, much worse in many ways. For starters, the Holocaust was a deliberate act of mass murder. Unlike climate extinction, which, terrible as it will be, is closer to mass reckless manslaughter. Yet, even the fact that the Holocaust was mass murder doesn't really even begin to describe the Holocaust. I mean, there's been mass racist murders which have took place in, for example, Rwanda in the mid-90s, during the civil war between the Hutus and the Tutsis. But what made the Holocaust really unique was its cold, calculated, attempted extermination of an entire race of people, namely Jews, which involved the deliberate building of death camps, of transport to the death camps. There were railway lines built specifically for Auschwitz. There was the bureaucratic and scientific identification of Jews for later slaughter, of which IBM collaborated. And it was literally industrial scale murder. Well, it was industrial scale because it was using industrial methods. Now, here on Radio Resistance, we'll talk in future broadcasts about the evils of fascism and why it must be smashed. But going back to Monday night, Holocaust Memorial Night, at Chesterfield College West Studios, there was a commemoration of the Holocaust. Now, I could rabbit on about it, but instead, I'll let the organiser talk about it.
And on behalf of the Chesterfield Equality and Diversity Forum and the Borough Council, I'd like to welcome you all here this evening. This is one of 10,000 events that are taking place all over the country on Holocaust Memorial Day. And this year it is a significant day because it's actually 75 years to the day that probably the most notorious extermination camp, Auschwitz, was liberated. And of course it's 25 years as well since the genocide in Bosnia. It appears that we never learned, don't we? So this is why it's really important to have events like this, and then good people like you can go out and spread the word across the community. The theme for the Holocaust Memorial Day this year is Standing Together. This has been chosen by the Holocaust Memorial Trust because it's hoped that this will encourage everyone to challenge identity-based hostility, especially at a time when it appears that in the UK and internationally there has been an increase in that sort of hostility and behaviour. And some of you may have looked at the video I did earlier today when the Mayor of Chesterfield and I signed the Holocaust Memorial book, and I sort of, you know, we want to encourage more people to sign that book, and we want to stand with our communities in standing up against hostility and discrimination to anybody on grounds of their identity, whatever identity it is, whether it's to do with somebody's faith, somebody's gender, their age, their ethnicity, whatever. We need to be very diligent in challenging it wherever it happens. I think we've got two very exciting things to look at this evening. I think they will prove very moving. First of all, we have the Pomegranate Youth Theatre, who are going to do a performance across the hallway here. After the Youth Theatre's performance, which is about helping us to reflect on how families will have felt when they were moved from their homes into the ghetto and the adjustments that they had to make about that. When we'll be able to listen to our guest speaker, who is Dr. Carmen Leverick, who is a lecturer in theatre from the University of Sheffield. And she'll be talking about how we can commemorate the Holocaust in the UK. And there will be an opportunity at the end of that to ask questions, probably get some answers, but also there might be a little bit of discussion as well based on your experiences. When you move in again from these seats, I'd really encourage you to go and have a look at the letters that students from the college have written in the room there. I've just had a little peek in at some of them. And what they have done is they have read about victims of genocide and chosen an individual and written a letter to them. And the content of those letters is quite thoughtful, but also the writing is absolutely beautiful. I've never seen so much beautiful writing in such a long time, because most people have forgotten how to do nice writing, because we just type away, don't we? So do go and have a look at those. There's also some letters where the students have chosen somebody, say, an individual or a group, who is discriminated against, and written to them offering support as well. So I'm not sure it's right to say that we're in for a treat this evening, given the seriousness of the subject matter, but I think we'll have plenty of food for thought by the time we leave. So once again, thank you very much for coming.
Now, the play was impressive, performed by young theatre students. It was based around the diary of a Jew who was being persecuted by the Nazis. Shades of Anne Frank, who we started this report with, but with a more positive ending, where they vowed to fight back against the Nazis and their treatment of them. And on that note, I'm going to go back to the music with the sound of the Manic Street Preachers. This track needs almost no introduction. Anti-fascist song. If you tolerate this, your children will be next. Manic Street Preachers there with a slogan used by those fighting against Franco's fascists during the 1936 Spanish Civil War. If you tolerate this, your children will be next. Well, we're coming towards the end of this week's broadcast of Radio Resistance, so over to you. Maybe you'd like to comment on Radio Resistance. Maybe you'd like to comment on what's going on in the news in politics. Indeed, maybe you'd like to comment on Brexit, whether you're happy that Brexit's taken place or whether you're not, whether you voted for or against Brexit, we really don't care, just to try and keep it left-wing. Maybe you've been on strike, maybe you've been on a demonstration, maybe you've been to a meeting. You'd like to send us a report, preferably with some audio. Maybe you're at a workplace which has in the past successfully unionised. Against the odds, in which case. I'm sure many of our listeners, indeed I'm sure I myself, would love to hear from you about how that was achieved. Or maybe you'd simply like to request a song, dedicate a song to a friend, suggest some music we should be playing. Either which way, you can contact us by the following means. Email us at studio@radioresistancechesterfield.com. That's studio@radioresistancechesterfield.com. Or even easier, just to fill in the form in the contact section of our website, which is at resistancechesterfield.radio.fm. That's resistancechesterfield.radio.fm or www.radioresistancechesterfield.com. That's www.radioresistancechesterfield.com. Also, from contact section of our website, you can contact us by Facebook. Just follow the link. And like I say, I don't care which way you were voted in the Brexit referendum. We still need you on board because in the coming 11 months and beyond, to fight against the coming Tory attacks piggybacked onto the Brexit negotiations, we're going to need, in the words of Desmond Dekker, unity.
This is the time that we all should live as one, brothers. This is the time that we all should live as one, sisters. So come along, brothers, and come along, sisters. UNITY is unity. So come along, brothers and sisters. Make a run.
Resistance is futile.
Oh no it ain't.
Resistance is futile.
Oh no it ain't.
Resistance is futile.
Oh no it ain't.
Radio Resistance Chesterfield.